Good evening. This is class 4 of 6. So we've got 2 more after this for establishing a daily practice anyway. I did want to remind you all that Venerable Amy, our upcoming visiting teacher, is coming this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So she's doing a weekend workshop on the path to joy. So this is a wonderful opportunity to experience a really wonderful teacher if you haven't already experienced Venerable Amy in the past. She's been here before. She's really delightful, and I think we would all get a lot out of it. I'm looking forward to it. So it's Friday night from 7 to 9, and then pretty much all day on Saturday and Sunday. Check the website, though, for more information. And I think that's all. Maybe silence your cell phones. And, of course, if you are keeping track of your information on your sheet, at the last class I'll have the completion card, and you can fill that out and turn it in to me at some point. If you don't catch me, there's in that back cabinet top far left, there's a little shelf for Discovering Buddhism. You can always drop it there. Okay, so I think we'll go ahead and get started then. Thanks.
Hey everyone. Well, good evening, and thank you for coming. I know it's not a good weather out there, but you made an effort to come here. That's wonderful. Before we settle in, I'd like to ask a question. Have you guys been doing some reading? Has everybody been reading the required reading? It's okay to say no. Good. And it's perfectly fine if you say no. But honesty is the best. I would really encourage you to read it because it will make more sense. I may say one or two things. Maybe I do provide some details in some cases. But you're missing out on some wonderful instructions. And what happens during the class, you have like 6 days to read maybe 10, 15 pages. Not a lot. I know sometimes I work full time, and I know Monday class is coming up. Though I've read it, I sometimes go on a weekend and I'll pick up the pages and say, oh, Pabongka Rinpoche, I remember this, where is it? And I'll go through the lessons, and I find myself reading 2-3 things, and I can get it done within half a day. So it's important, because it's suggested that if you really want to soak the teachings, then it's important that you at least do some readings. And they've done a good job putting some very important things. They're not telling you to read this entire thing. They're telling you to read pages here to here, here to here. It gives you perspective, okay? So if you're not reading it, fine, but I suggest to you that take some time, and just browse through what they're asking you to do, okay? So you can at least, that's the homework then, okay? There's another small homework I'll give you. For walking meditation, should not take you more than 5 or 10 minutes, and you walk every day anyways, up or down or from one room to another, you can do it right even at that point. So before we start our this session today, so this is the 4th class, we have 2 more. Is there anyone first time here? All right, so I'll give you some, I'll catch you up to a certain point. And then you can stay for a while, and I can give you very quick summary. But my tendency is to summarize what we went through. So, but even then, sometimes you may not link it to the larger picture. But it just take it easy, keep your ears open, and just listen to me babble. Okay. All right. So thank you for coming anyways. So let's do a little calm abiding meditation. And first of all, the purpose of this is to bring your physical and mental yourselves here, and it is to, again, we do so many things in our day-to-day activities, but you chose to come here to listen, to learn, to find, to for yourself. Or curiosity brought you here. So it's important that at this moment, for the next hour and a half, you are physically and mentally here. Okay? So obviously, you all are aware of... Oh, something is blocking the air.
The air filter is quite dirty.
When, where is that at?
Oh,
I'll email Brian.
Okay. All right. If it shuts off, then we'll turn it off and I can go through it without it. Yeah, let's just turn it off right now for the meditation and a couple of introductions. For 2 seconds. Yes, off. So for this meditation, you just need to keep your back straight. If you're sitting in a chair, put your feet down. If you're sitting on the floor, it's called the Vajra position. The idea is to keep back straight, not leaning back and not crouching forward, but just nice and straight. Keeping your arms open and your right hand is on top of your left hand. Thumbs are touching and it sits about 2 or 3 fingers below your navel. Okay? Belly button. And just kind of sit there quietly. And what you want to do is take a moment, scan your body, take a deep breath, make yourself comfortable, and see if you can concentrate on your breath. And why breath? Breath is neutral. If your mind is excited, it neutralizes that. If it is dull, it will again neutralize that. So breath has no real other color or shape or form, so it's neutral. So slowly breathing in and out, put your mind or focus on your breath. If it helps, you can focus just near the nostril where you feel the tingling sensation. Or for others, your belly just go exhaling and inhaling, going out and in. Just focus on that movement with your breath in and out. If you find your mind wandering, just observe it. Don't cling on to that thought and remind yourself to go back and focus on your breath. And see if you can stay there. How long can you stay there and keep bringing your mind back to the breath? Now while your mind is a little bit calmer, let's set our motivation for this class and this time here today. Please set your motivation when I say these words. Think about them, have some sort of intensity behind it, and a little clarity. So first take a deep breath in and out. Give some energy in your body and mind. And visualize breathing in clean, clear, white light. And exhaling sluggishness, contraction, obscurations in a form of black smoke. now soaking in some of this white light, giving energy, inspiration to the mind, and breathing out all that which contradicts our aspiration. Now call to your mind our wish to do something meaningful with our lives, and recognizing that we have some kind of a precious opportunity and wishing to do something with that. Now contacting that place in our hearts that sincerely wants to help the situation in the world, for the various beings in their various situations of existence, and a wish to be able to develop the qualities of our body and mind that would enable us to help in lasting ways. So generate the wish that by hearing these teachings, we might be able to put them into practice exactly in the manner in which they were intended, and swiftly ripen the qualities of enlightenment within us. And then inviting to this place the presence of our teachers and the guides of this life and all of the lineage going back to Shakyamuni Buddha, asking them to be present and to bless our minds as we receive these teachings for the benefits of all living beings. Okay, thank you. Bring your attention back to the class. Again, just to emphasize, before you do anything, Dharma practice, it's very important to do two things, motivation and dedication. I'll say this every class probably. People get tired of that, but it's, even Geshe-la told me this. He says, dedicate. Set the intention. Don't forget to do that. Even if you have a meeting or something just in your mind, set the intention, and in the end, just dedicate it. It has so much power. One time he even told me a whole story about the power of intention setting and dedication, which I'll share with you at some point. But again, just make sure that it's a very important part of the practice. Okay? Intention to me is like setting the seed with commitment in it. And a commitment is not somebody that forces it on you. You do it in yourself. You have an exam coming, you commit yourself to doing and study, with pressure or no pressure. Then you do something about it, exercise, diet, whatever you do. The mind has to say, got to do it. That's when you do it, right? So intention is that powerful, right? So, as usual, we went through a couple of definitions in the last class, last three classes. Were there any questions or concerns? Do you even remember which ones we went through? Maybe I should ask one or two just to see if somebody remembers. So, simple one. What are 10 directions? When we hear the word 10 directions, what are they?
So it's supposed to be like north, south, east, west, and then the diagonals on those, northeast and north, south, and all those. So that's 8, and then up and down.
Correct. And we see that once in a while. In a lot of these teachings, you know, you see Buddhas in all the 10 directions, the light in all 10 directions. It pervades everything. And when you hear words like in the three times, what does three times mean? You see that so many places. That's your past, present, and future. So time is of irrelevance when you know it and you are Buddha yourself. It's all there. You know it all. And you're present everywhere. Okay? So that's important. And I went through a couple of others, but I like to add, oh yeah, and then in second or third class, I talked about, and we'll cover it very shortly as a summary, glance meditation. We talked about Lamrim and Lamrim Chenmo. And for you that you're new here, so or your first time, so Buddha gave 84,000 teachings. It's very hard to comprehend all those teachings. But we were very lucky that in our lineage teaching, behind the screen is Lama Atisha. If we can start from Buddha himself taught, then there were many learned pandits who took all the teachings and compiled it in such a way that can be useful for us in a step-by-step way. So if somebody were to tell you all these teachings, you see these little square boxes in the altar, these are all teachings. They're written on this long paper like this back and forth. Right? It would be very hard to kind of condense that as in, same thing before this class, what do I do? This is wonderful, but it comes in, some pieces stay there, then you go on to another thing, oh, this is wonderful. So it's important that they set the stage. So Lamrim is a path which is step by step that if you follow and you really make a change in your mind, you can become enlightened. So it's laid out to you. It gives you the full teaching in a very systematic way. There are two books that we suggest people. I call them your meditation manual, Lamrim Chenmo, written by Lama Tsongkhapa, which is very detailed, three volumes. They are outside there, and it covers all those teachings in quite a detail. But Pabongka Rinpoche's commentary was a big favor. It's a thick book, but I tell you what, when I read it, it blows my mind that he gives you a little story and the emphasis on why what is important. It's called The Liberation in Palm of Your Hand. I call this a meditation manual. It's written that way. Again, I think I've gone over this several times, but I suggest that if you are a serious practitioner, that you look at this book with keen eyes. You'll get a lot out of it. So those we went through. I also think that as a practitioner, for those that are just curious, probably not as important, but it's very important to know the lineage. Who said it? Why should I pay attention to it? It's important. You will go, even in a simple little college environment, if people know a teacher or a professor is really good, I'm going to take his class. I'm going to take her class, right? We have a tendency to do that. We kind of find it out, like, oh, he was really good, you know? They're fun, they're good. So same way, lineage gives you unbroken teachings. So it really, they emphasize the same thing, and you get commentaries on that, so you don't deviate. Because there are many writers out there. Some of them are wonderful. I'm not putting them down in any ways. But to keep it clean, to keep it straight, and to really see the source is very important in my mind. And that's why lineage is very important. Okay? Maybe we can turn this on now, see if we can show them a little bit. In last class, I told you one more thing that is important to know. You see the word Dorje. So I told you Dorje was a Vajra symbol. It's on the left-hand side. It's symbolic of like a diamond-like, something that you cannot break, cut through, solid. And it's a symbolism for the Dharma. It also represents the compassion. So there are two wings. In Buddhism, you hear the two wings all the time. Okay? Compassion and wisdom. You need both to fly. And Vajra represents the compassion side, and the bell usually held in the left hand represents the reality or the knowledge of emptiness or wisdom. You need to understand both of them to fully comprehend a lot of these teachings or advanced teachings. But be familiar with it. When you see some of these deities, you will see that in their hand. And it just represents full of compassion, and full of wisdom, they understand how reality is. Their equipoise, perfectly in meditation. Okay? Represents complete. It's important to know that. There's a lot of meaning behind the designs, how it is made, and what they represent. There's a lot of thinking behind it, but at least you should be familiar with it. And then again, the three aspects, principal aspects of the path. Can anybody remind me what they are? The three principal aspects of the path. Anybody?
Renunciation of ignorance, the mind of compassion, and the mind of wisdom.
Perfect. Renunciation, emptiness, and bodhicitta. And Geshe-la gave us a very good example. Whenever you see these deities, they are sitting on a moon cushion. You see the white in the bottom of the Buddha figure here. But they'll say, so it's on a lotus flower, and they'll say sun and a moon disc. Okay? So symbolically, according to Geshe-la, the lotus flower represents renunciation. Renunciation from the cyclic life of suffering, birth, death, old age, sickness, attachments, ignorance, anxiety, full of it, right? And the happinesses we do have in this life are temporary because you're searching from one to another to another to another. They don't last. So to perfectly become Buddha and to be happy, fully enlightened, this represents that these deities have complete control over renunciation. The sun represents emptiness, the way things exist, and the moon represents bodhicitta, full compassion. Compassion for all sentient beings. Okay? So you can see all the deities have a lotus and you see some sort of a disc on which they sit. So it's good to know these things. As you're reading, you see that. My Shakyamuni Buddha on the throne, seated on a moon disc, and you're like, okay. Pay attention to those things. It means something. Okay? Thank you. Sidetracked a little bit, so I'll get back to our normal. Okay, I also want you to see this particular one. It's called the two accumulation. You'll see that you'll hear, may I achieve two collections, or you will see the two accumulations. So in your meditation, when you're sitting down and say, may I receive two accumulations, or you're reading a prayer, and it says, by doing this, you will gain this accumulation. What does it mean? So I wrote it down today, also called the two types of merits, the merit of virtue, which develops the method side. Again, remember that while you're living in a conventional life, the way to perfect your life is through six perfections. Karen, you remember the six perfections, I'm sure.
The first one is generosity.
Good. That's perfect. That's a good start. So, generosity. Develop the generosity mind. Then the second one is morality. Third one is patience. Fourth one is called enthusiastic perseverance or joyful effort. Fourth one is developing concentration. And the last one is ultimately seeing the wisdom directly, perceiving emptiness directly, the way things are. We concretize everything, right? She, it, chair, table, fine, good for conversation, but those are mere labels. Think about how they truly came about, and are they changing every day? They are impermanent. Things will go in garbage at one point, and we'll talk about that later. But just as a general concept, when they talk about emptiness, there's a whole module on it. But be aware of the two accumulations. Okay, and the second one is the transcendental wisdom, knowing the way things are. So those are the two accumulations. So when you say, may I gain these two collections, it's saying, may I, on my way to become a Buddha, may I have perfect understanding of the method or the six perfections, and may I fully understand wisdom. Okay? And obviously, merit. This is not the merit the teacher gives you when you're doing good in class. You're developing virtuous mind. When you do good things, when you do virtuous things, when you're kind, when you do your practice properly, you're developing a virtuous mind. And why is it important? Remember, this is not about just learning a class. The whole idea behind establishing daily practice is what? Changing our minds that have lost its course because of obscuration. That's why we have anxiety, and that's why we are ignorant about how things are. And so, in order to really reset our minds to go onto the journey to become Buddha yourself, omniscient mind, omnipotent mind, is to then accumulate merits. And that's why we say in karma, the merits or the karma of body, speech, and mind. Do all the positive things. There's a whole module on that. Okay? So that's a merit. So when you do things in the kampa, when you're helping somebody, when somebody says, can you help me? You're creating merit. But your mind has to be there. If you go with that mind that this is good for me, this is good, I'm helping my mind, and do it with compassion, then you're creating merit. You know, so just be mindful of that. Okay? I won't spend too much time on this so we can move forward, but I think it's important for people who are coming here first time, and to remind yourself that in class 1, we reviewed the 7-point meditation posture. We did the leather and butter analogy. Again, the whole point was, if you don't soak the Dharma into your mind, then it becomes more intellectual and it becomes stale. It's more like, I just need to know, what are these things? What are the 4 of that and 5 of that? It doesn't mean you're going to do something about it. It's just there. That's all it meant. And then we talked about that, we started with the very general terms. There are morning practices, then there are some things you do, and then there's evening practices. We talked about that in general. Okay? We then, let's see, did I miss something? Class 2, we went through the manual, meditation manuals, and what I'm saying is, this book is written in a way that you can actually meditate on certain things, and we talked about what in a minute. I'll cover that. And then we talked about, okay, so once you know that, it's important to know that there are some preparatory rites, preparatory practices you have to do, right? So we give you an analogy. If some guest was coming to your house or to your room or dormitory, you would put your pillow in the right place and you would pin the table up and you would make it look like, oh my gosh, my clothes are here, let me just throw it in the closet, right? We do all those things. Why? So the guest feels welcomed. Same way, when you are trying to clean your mind and you are going to bring in Buddha nature, Buddha mind, your teachers are coming, you're setting up your mind, what would you give for that? And so it's important to have these preparatory practices. A lot is written about preparatory practices. And then we talk about cleaning the space, setting up the altar, doing your offering. And why are we doing this? To actually prepare for the meditation. So these 2 steps are taken to create the environment, to cleanse the place, but you're cleaning your mind. You remember, your offering, if you were a Buddha, that's the state of mind. Multiply it. If you offer 1 flower, think of the garden that you're offering. The seed is in your mind. How wonderful that is. Expand it. Right? And then you sit on your cushion. So now you're in a great place. You're sitting down. The first thing you want to do is you take refuge. So it's like a child runs to a mother. It's the same way. You say, teach me. Bring the teachings. Be here. I am in your protection. It's a great mind to be. And then you develop bodhicitta. And remember, these things sound like big words, but we've gone through this in the prayer book. Very easy, right? Refuge. I go to refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, Dharma, and Supreme Assembly. Right? By virtue of, you know those words, right? I'm not going to paraphrase it. Okay, and then you develop bodhicitta, right? May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. You gotta think about those words. All sentient beings. See? So there are 4 things there, right? So you need to know that you can say that, and once you're settled in, and now, you are invoking a merit field. There's a beautiful prayer for that too. 4-liner. You're bringing in your deity, your teachers, right? You can be yourself, or you can even imagine all your family members are sitting there, loved ones are sitting there. Incorporate everybody. That is your mindset. And then once you do that, you offer the 7 limb prayers. Okay, we already have that. If you read any of these practices, you will have this format. You take refuge, bodhicitta, right? And then you do your seven limb prayers. Now you are on the cushion, so this is a mental practice. You do the three prostrations in your mind, just like we did it here, right? Then you offer. Imagine what you're offering. Okay? Then the third piece is, if you've done something not so properly, you can speak it out. You can say, I've done something wrong and I regret it. I would like to rely on it. You can call it a confession if you want, but words sometimes have different meanings for different people. It's actually just letting yourself open to it. And after you do that, you tell, you're also asking the teacher to turn the wheel of Dharma. That means continue to teach. No, you rejoice. Sorry. The fourth one is you rejoice. All the positive things you've done. For you to be able to sit down, practice Dharma, and do these things, you need to rejoice what brought you there. Be happy about your life. All the good things for your precious human life. So don't forget that everything, you don't see it in doom and gloom. The idea is to become happy. The idea is to become Buddha. The idea is to know perfect knowledge, perfect presence, and able to help entire universes. That's mind-blowing. We can't even comprehend. Right? So imagine you're trying to reach that goal. So rejoice that you are starting to do that or you're in your way. And then you're... Go ahead.
So where in that list does the regret and the happiness of the people...
Sorry about that. Where in that list does the regret and the rejoicing...
When you say the seven limb prayers, right? Uh-huh. I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind.
Right.
I offer all things actual and imagined. Then you say, I declare all my negative actions. I rejoice in the merits of all ordinary holy beings, right?
Right.
So you're rejoicing in the fact of all the good things that have happened. But when you're confessing before that, you can say, I have done something and I would like to not do it again. So when you're confessing, in a sense, you're working with that part of it. But in karma, there are four opponent powers. Next class, when we go through purification practice, we'll go through what is regret, what is reliance, what is remedy, and what is the resolve. And we'll go through that. And then you can purify yourself.
So when I'm doing that prayer that has those two things in it, do I stop, like, in the prayer and actually think, like, what did I do yesterday that I want to regret, or what did I do that I want
to
celebrate?
You want to put some weight to what you're confessing to.
Right.
Okay? If I just say it, I confess everything I've done wrong.
Right.
It means nothing.
Right.
It's just a phase. But if yesterday, maybe I yelled at somebody.
Right.
Or I blamed somebody. And I just say, you know what? It's against my practice. I should have thought about that. It's my mind, not somebody else. Mm-hmm. I'll try not to do it.
Yeah.
That's confession. It's every step here is about you changing your mind, right, not about saying the words.
So I'm going to go slow on the prayer.
Absolutely.
So that I have time to really think of real stuff and I'm not just saying it.
Yeah, I don't want to sidetrack, but when I do the offerings, I have my own offerings. I do this little Samanta Bhadra thing, I offer my body, speech, and mind, and I do a cloud mantra and all this. I try to make it big. For my own self, I like it.
Right.
You can develop your own.
Yeah.
Okay. But in a rush or anything, at least once you've done it a couple of times, it will come to you. You just have to think about it and think, no more. Or for today, I won't. Thank you. Move on. No guilt. That's the best part I like about our teachings. That is, guilt is poor me. Please pay attention to me. Oh, I'm so sorry. But regret is, you know in your heart, that wasn't the right thing. I know it's not right. Move on. It's done. I will clarify that. I will say sorry maybe tomorrow, or maybe I'll do something else. But you can work on it, right? That's all it is all about. Right? So now you know the steps. You see the morning and evening. You understand preparatory practices, you know refuge, bodhicitta, seven limb prayers, and obviously we offer mandala, it's a theoretical universe. You offer to, you know, it's like if you were a Buddha, what would your world look like? So There is a very nice writing about how excellent a way you can offer mandala. Some people actually have those jewels and rice and sand, and other people actually, so if you go to that golden wish fulfilling sun, your required reading, there is a very extensive mandala offering in there too, if you want to learn more. And there is a short mandala offering in your prayer book. It follows the same thing, bodhicitta, after refuge, bodhicitta, seven limb prayers, that's a mandala offering, right? And you see sometimes Geshe-la and some advanced practitioners sit like this. It's a symbolic of the Mount Meru, the four continents, the sun and the moon. You offer it to your Buddha, and then you just nice offering. It's called mandala. Anybody care to say what the mandala, short mandala offering is?
I can do it.
Go ahead.
This ground anointed with perfume, strewn with flowers, adorned with Mount Meru, four continents, the sun and the moon. I imagine this as a Buddha field and offer it. May all living beings enjoy this pure land.
It's a wonderful offering. See? So then you're done with your mandala offering, and then you make requests. There's beautiful prayers in there. You're just requesting teachers to stay, to teach you, to shower the blessings. Remember, you may think in the beginning that somebody else is doing that, but the strong wish is the wish that you're developing in your own mind. May the teachings come. May I accept them. May I look for the right teachers. May my teachers stay with me. It's your yearning to deepen your, soak in your dharma practice. Remember that, okay? We already went through this, evening practices, six preparatory practices. We went through seven limb. Again, just a quick look at it. Prostrating, making offerings, confession, rejoicing, requesting to stay, requesting to teach, and dedicating. Remember, at the end, you're dedicating. And again, dedication harnesses your positive thoughts, holds it there, and it goes off. It's a really wonderful practice. Okay, mandala offering. Again, you can see the gesture there. Yes, Karen.
A question on each of those prayers. So what exactly is Mount Meru is the first question.
It is they call it, we may not, according to the explanations, this is how a Buddha or Buddhist see the world, universes. And they are this directions, and there are these layers of mountain, and the center is Mount Meru. Okay? Is how the universes are said. We are not able to see it because of our obscure mind. We see it this way. But when you get attainments, people are able to see it according to the golden wish fulfilling. But the idea here is to offer universes. If you look at all the directions I offer you, the center being, it also represents in my thinking sometimes, when you think about the five Dhyani Buddhas or five Buddha families, center, the north, the south, everything is very connected to you seeing the entire universe as your Buddha nature. Okay? But you can read about that. It explains you Jambudvipa and north is, and how the mountains are, and how the central mountain is, and yes, at some point there's an explanation that as you get attainments, you're able to see Mount Meru and all this stuff. So, of course, I am not that advanced to see it, so I can only go by what it said in the book.
Okay, and then the second question is, at the end of the seven limb prayer, we dedicate all the merits of ourselves and others to the Great Enlightenment. How do we dedicate the merits of others?
Think of somebody positive. How about your teachers? How about all that you know? Think of Richard Gere, who does all these wonderful things with Dalai Lama. Just a visualization of all the positive things out there, whatever they are, may they go out there. It's just a thought, positive thought. It develops your own bodhicitta.
Okay, so you don't have to actually do the thing. It's kind of like rejoicing.
Yeah, yeah. I'm happy that you're happy, right? If you were to do meditation practice, or if some of you actually do it, I rejoice in your happiness that you were able to do it. That's wonderful, because if everybody thought that way, we would have no problems. And that's the wish. It's a positive wish for all sentient beings to be happy.
Okay, thank you.
It's a wonderful thing, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. they have all these words in there, so take a look at it. Maybe it is the mountain there, you know. Okay, the sixth is obviously making requests. And then to set up an effective meditation, we talked about the preparation is done. You have to have the right motivation, actual meditation, and then, of course, dedication. Then we went, okay, in class three, what to meditate on. So now you should be linking in your mind your schedule, like, okay, I don't have a lot of time, but I'm going to at least go in there near my altar, clean it up. Maybe I'll offer a flower, if not some food, water, something, whatever you want to offer, multiply that in your mind, set up the place, sit down and do your meditation, pick a subject from Lam Rim, which we talked about, start with death and impermanence or precious human rebirth. And again, the idea is not to do the whole thing verbatim. The idea is not to put yourself in a contracted way of knowing everything. Pick one or two sentences and contemplate on it, even if it's a week. And you will see how much meaning it brings you, then move on. But they've given you if you were to do your readings, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, in how to meditate, the last part of your reading gives you a very good example of how to meditate and how to think. Also, if you're doing your reading through Pabongka Rinpoche's reading, it tells you, it's like set up like a meditation, right? So it's important. And remember, Lam Rim is in three stages, three scopes. The lower scope, the middle scope, and the advanced scope or higher scope. So the major things in the lower scope, obviously, is how to devote your mind to the teachers, how to receive teachings, obviously precious human rebirth, and then you also have the death and impermanence, right? And then the different realms. So precious human rebirth probably is very important. For me, it was personally that death and impermanence put enough fear into me to do the precious human rebirth. Because when I initially started out, I was like, yeah, it's precious, and I got the Dharma, still not soaked in at the time, right? Then I went through some training, and when they talked about, and I'll show you some slides very quickly, is death can come anytime. What happened to Kobe? Think about that. When he sat in the helicopter, he was rejoicing, going to a game with a daughter. Did he know that this is going to happen? That's how life will go. Just like that. And if you don't take advantage of that, then you missed out a good chance to do something about it. That's the urgency we want to have. So enough of that. And remember, it is all about generating experience. Okay? And you can take different approaches. And so then I'll turn into today's class, because I think we've gone through this, how to meditate on Lam Rim. We talked about these freedoms, that you're alive, you are in a place where Dharma is there, you have a good body, mind, and sense to be able to learn. There are places that don't have this opportunity. You know, we talked about Afghanistan, Iraq, some places of Africa. They don't have the opportunity. They are so worried about where the next drop of water is coming from. So how lucky we are. So precious human rebirth. Okay, then we have the 10 endowments, the richnesses, like I was just telling you. And you don't have to know all of these things. Look at the fourth and the fifth point, not having committed any five heinous crimes and having faith in the Dharma. You kind of feel good about it, that, yeah, this is something important. That's the starting point, and you've got to think about that for a while. Then look at the fourth and the fifth in the circumstantial endowment. We are able to meet the pure followers of Buddha's teachings. Practitioners can enjoy kind support. We have that at Kadampa Center even, right? So these are good things that we have, and we should rejoice in that, and we can focus on that a little bit sometimes, and you've got to think very deeply about it. What really got me going was this one. Death is certain. The time of the death is uncertain. And only Dharma helps us at the time of the death. And if you took any classes on karma, anybody, then you will know why that last bullet point is extremely important. When you have fear and you are in a stage where you're going to go and not knowing, typically many of us will be hospitalized with tubes going, CPAP going, okay, or morphine going in you, you have no clue. You've already lost some of the mindset, but the fear of clinging comes up. What about my house, and what about my car, and what about my children? And this will teach you that your those thoughts then bind you back. You come for because you're still craving for something. That's where the seed goes. But if you have lost fears and you have a full-fledged trust in how the mind is going to go on to the next stage, or the where the seed or the subtle mind goes to, then you know that if you've done something good, then that's the way wisdom is, that's the way emptiness is. I'm just going to move on. Then you have a less fear, and chances are your seeds of karma will have fruition with a positive outcome. So these things, when I learn those, I'm saying, oh, this is important life. I better do something about it. Then I went to precious human rebirth. Okay, so mine was a little different. And remember, you keep on your path through Lamrim. And remember, what is the goal? You becoming Buddha. Okay? You becoming Buddha. And generate those experiences, hold them in your heart, and remind yourself once in a while, those good things, and that feeling you get sometimes, that emotion you get when you are really soaked in, think about those. It will bring you back to thinking on being on the path again. We suggest that we don't get too contracted and I got to know everything to the 500 pages. No. You can focus, look at it from different angles, make sure it's meaningful for you and it develops the right experience for you. Look at all those things, reason it. You know, this is not a blind thing. Ask questions, find out, look at it, think about it, talk to somebody, do some reading. You will come to your own conviction. So now we just have a few things. This is a short, actually, topics, but important. So now, we remember we started with morning and evening, and then we talked about preparatory practices for your meditation session. So what happens the rest of the day? For some of you say, oh, well, I go to work after I have my coffee. I sit in the car, go to work, and then I'm in samsara again, right? Well, the whole goal of this practice is changing your mind to become Buddha. And so this is not a part-time thing. This is not I do this at 6 o'clock and I'll do that at 8 o'clock. To make your practice even better soaking, the idea is we parse ourselves. Well, sometimes you will say, well, okay, this is over. Let me get back to the reality. What is the reality? You got to question that. See how we've habituated ourselves, right? So what we're going to talk very quickly, the next 15 or 20 minutes, is to how to protect our mind during the day. Okay? Okay. Think about news, how our culture is for us for a moment. Anything happens, the first thing we talk about, who to blame. Right? Anything happens, we're going to find the culprit. Look at it from a very different perspective. We create these things. We ask for some of these things. The idea is also look at the lawsuits. For the littlest things, people will sue somebody. So in general terms, okay, I'm not saying what is, this one was okay, and I'm not going there. It's our mind we are working with. But the idea that we blame somebody else for our problems, that's the main point. Whose problems are there? That your problem. We created these things. We see it a certain way. If the same problem, if somebody's yelling at you and you just look at it like it was just an echo, it's no longer somebody screaming at you. It's how you process it inside. That doesn't mean that you may not have bad things happen sometimes, genuinely. But they also say that as your practice grows, the way the karma works sometimes, it has a fruition immediately of some of those activities to burn it out. So you'll have a milder effect if you're practicing and purifying. But things will happen. A lot of times you'll find all of these people. Yeah, look at historical figures. You can look at Moses to Christ to Krishna to any of these even big beings. They go through difficult times, but they do it like bodhisattvas for others. Bam, it's over. Okay? So think in those terms also. And then we'll talk about this lamrim colored glasses. So let's take a look at that. lambrim colored glasses, what they're talking about is when you're going through your practice looking at lambrim topics, okay? So say you're thinking about precious human rebirth, that's your meditation. Okay, so you think, you put your glasses on and everything you see, so you go to grocery shop and you see an old person. Say, oh, how precious my life is. I don't want to go through this in my next life. You see an ambulance go by and you think, yeah, we all have to die. I'm very lucky to be alive. I should do something. So you are changing your, you're taking all the activities and turning that into a practice. You're focusing on your topic of precious human rebirth, isn't it? Take another one. We have an example of that. And one of the homework I want you to do is for 10 minutes, do a walking meditation. So find a place where you are not worried about if you're going to run into the chair or the dining table. Find a small space. Take a few steps back and forth, very deliberate, very slowly, and just say one thing in your mind. Everything is impermanent. Everything is impermanent. And look around for a second. Just once in a while, look at something, the trees. Oh, in the winter the leaves fall. Spring, new birth. They get again yellow, they fall. Oh, this floor, when it was new, it wasn't like this. I see more scratches and holes now. It will go one day. Somebody will replace it. Everything is impermanent. Look at anything. Look at yourself. Look at your partner. When you first met, 15 years later, see some wrinkles coming, behavior changes, body changes, self change, right? So think about it for a while. And then what is the purpose of that meditation? Is to be mindful of what you're practicing. So if your focus or topic of your contemplation is precious human rebirth or impermanence in this case, then you are thinking about how things are impermanent. If things were concrete, nothing would change. There would be no death. Everybody would be concrete like a stone, right? Even stones are impermanent. So everything is impermanent. In this phenomena, everything is impermanent. Okay? But it's a great practice when you're walking for even few minutes. You can just take the topic, even death at impermanence, you can think of it that way, precious human rebirth, going somewhere, filling the gas. You see somebody coming out with a cane or taking time instead of losing patience, you can say, oh, this is what happens when people have problems or their feet are no longer, you know, functioning, correct? Precious human rebirth. I am right now able to read. I am able to see some things. I'm able to contemplate. I have a place to come to. I have some community members, good friends. You can think and say, oh, my life is precious, that I have found Dharma, which is going to help me, not now, but to become Buddha. All of a sudden, your practice takes you even further. So you can remember what you're trying to do here. This is not about memorizing these things and reading the words and I gotta know everything. You are slowly working that mind that obviously would have thought of blaming somebody or saying, oh, what an old person, come on, I gotta go. Hurry up. It happens to all of us. Okay? Your mind, if it is in Dharma, will not see that. If you work it enough times, he will say, you may even want to go and say, can I help you? And they'll say, no, thank you, I'm fine. But you develop that kind of a thinking. And with parents, with people you are having arguments with, all of a sudden your mind starts to change. And that's the point. Then the Dharma means something. After that, if you read and memorize some of those verses or quotes, they will mean so much to you now. Because your experience speaks louder than the words. When you first read, it's a little tortuous. Like I said, two collections and the 37 practices, and I'm like, what is all this stuff? I don't know anything. That's where your mind goes. Rather, soak, experience it, read it, find it. And all of a sudden it comes together like, whoof, it comes right together. It's like, ah, that's what it means. So again, linking, this is about what? Establishing daily practice. When we are taking it further, not only morning, not only on Sundays, not only in the evening, but you're changing the frame of your mind. These are tools. and they're recommended tools by Rinpoche, by our teachers, lineage teachers, to continuously develop this compassionate mind, the renunciation towards dukkha or suffering, develop a mind that wants to be enlightened. And these are the tools they're giving you, that if you do this on a regular basis, your way of seeing the world changes, the way you see things changes, and all those obscurations you've had or hindrances you had, or you were seeing it a different way, start to change. You feel a little calmer. You start to feel a little joy in you. You want to help. You're a kinder, gentler person. You start to see some virtuous things come out of this. And you can measure it yourself, and you will see, maybe 6 months ago, this would have really ticked me off, and now it's like nothing. Somebody was telling me the other day, they broke something in the car, they had a mala and fell apart. For the first time, they were not too distraught about it. It's like, okay, it broke. I'll fix it. It was normal. It's like, oh my gosh. None of that. Okay? So, anyways, it's our practices. Any questions? Another thing some people do, I'll give you a short one, is some people have quotes that they put. If you're practicing impermanence or precious human rebirth, you'll find some quotes and you can put it up. So I'll just give you, this is a layout, so I'm going to talk about that in a minute. I think I had a picture, but it will come in a second. So feeding dharma practices is like people will have quotes on the refrigerator, the dharma wheel in the car, anything that reminds you of something. Some people like that. These are not all must do. These are things, tools that you can incorporate to help your mind. It's your own practice. It's your own mindset. And these are just options you have to think a little differently, and whatever resonates with you is the way you want to go in a proper way. Okay? Some people like tattoos. I had to mention that one. Some people put some tattoos that mean something to them. I'm not saying you should go get tattoos out there. But if you have tattoos, some people it's very meaningful for them. Right? They see something and they'll say Om Ahum, or they'll say Om Mani Padme Hum, and they think of Chandrasik, they think of compassion. Or they put it there because something happened in their life and it means something to them. It's a reminder. Right? So different angles, different people, different ways of practicing Dharma. Alright? Then there are also, if you haven't taken, yes sir. I was going to go to that. Prayer wheels have mantras in them, thousands of them. Sometimes Om Mani Padme Hum. And when you're turning the wheel of Dharma, it's like turning the wheel, right? Your mind is saying that may these prayers benefit all. May this give compassion. So it's a practice. You're continuously thinking of that, those positive thoughts. And that's why they do it. Just like mala is a way of you doing your mantras. 108 times, the wheel has, in all directions, the blessings go out. And they say the power of those mantras, like Chenrezig mantra or Medicine Buddha mantras, are so powerful that even the insect that touches, the atoms that touch it, anything that touches it, gets blessed. That's how much power it is in there. Because you have a positive mindset of even doing it. So that's why they do it. There are some people who can read a book and do the wheel at the same time. That's how good they get at that. You know, it's like doing one of those things, one hand this way, one hand that way. I don't know how to do that. Again, there are vows people take, and the important thing about vow is to remember that you can take a precept and say, I'm going to fast today. You're fine. That's a wonderful deed. You're going to help your body. But if you take a vow and fast with a commitment in it, they say that every second you are fasting, you are collecting immense amount of merit. To the point Lama Zopa Rinpoche even says, look at the monks sometimes, there's a little aura about them, because they live in vows. Vows and committing to behave a certain way creates even that much power. It's very energetic. Because you've taken a commitment to not do it, it is almost is commitment inside your mind, very stronger stamp on it, right? Much stronger stamp. But the power of vow, they talk about it in many books. Maybe you can take a little time to read what vows are and how. And there are different types of vows. Of course, the ordained people take different vows. There are bodhisattva vows. There are pratipoksha vows. But there are lay vows, refuge vows. And just quickly, no killing, no lying, no sexual misconduct. There are details behind that. If you haven't, you can download this book as part of the required reading, but you can download it free of charge from the Lama Yeshe archives. It's called The Direct and Unmistaken Method. It's all about vows. It's all about the refuge and precepts. Sorry. It's all about the precepts and the meaning. And no intoxicants. And then when you take the... I was going to walk through actually the precepts, but we won't have time, so maybe I'll do it next time. But it's, you should try it one time. You can take a precept for even 1 hour. You can take it for half a day. You're basically living 1 hour or half a day or a full day like a monk in vows. And your mind, and when you take those vows yourself, so now, it's important that you first time take it with a teacher, but if you're far away and you can't make it, you can take it on your own. If you go to page 37 of your prayer book, it tells you the prayers, it tells you what you're doing and why you're doing it. And there are some other vows that goes with precept. So on top of these, no killing, no lying and all that, there are other things like no major jewelry. Remember, these were made when there were a lot of kings and stuff like that, and they had a lot of things going on, no sitting on the throne and all that, just to humble themselves like a monk, to become simpler, to lose those other things. But it works in our sense too, right? We have all kind of fancy furniture, so for a day you try to be simpler, not to wear something, not to watch TV, not to play loud music, not to play some music, just quiet retreat for yourself. And maybe you can have breakfast and lunch. Some people only eat one time before noon, and then they don't eat till the next day. It commits you yourself. It strengthens your practice tremendously. When you go to some retreats like LOP or whatever, you'll see people doing it, and you'll see yourself. You do it once or twice and see how you feel. It's powerful. Okay? Okay, there you go. Eight Mahayana precepts, eating. And then let's talk about yoga of eating. That's another thing we do all the time, don't we? Like I do. Chips here, cornflakes there. We are always eating something. But offering food, I would like to just cover that very quickly so I say it correctly. Yeah. And then we'll go and do a meditation. And here it is. Okay, yoga of eating. Okay, so it's very helpful to visualize your teacher or your future state of Buddha, whichever you relate to the most in your heart, before you eat. Okay? And then visualize them as like a mini Buddha in your heart, and then, or a light. You can also visualize a beautiful light. And what you do is you bless the food by visualizing Om Ah Om. Okay? You visualize the letters Om Ah, whom? So can I maybe go there? I should be, I have it right here, right? Okay. And then as you recite the Om Ah Hum three times, you visualize that these letters send out light rays to the holy beings, and they absorb all their enlightened qualities of body, speech, and mind, which absorbs into the syllables, and then the syllables absorb into your food. So you think what you're doing. You're about to ingest some food, but even that becomes dharma practice. That I gain these qualities of the holy beings and their wisdom into me. So may this food make me that way. It's a wonderful thought, even food nourishing different cells of your body. So your mind is changed. You can take it further even and offer a cloud mantra, which I like to do sometimes. I just read it one time. Lama Zopa Rinpoche says, when you do this cloud mantra, which is in the book somewhere, it's like offering millions and millions of prayers, like as many as sand particles on a beach of a Pacific Ocean, like he was very specific. You're offering clouds. Make it large. It just expands your mind again. And it's a wonderful practice. So you can imagine how many times you eat or you take a snack. You don't have to do the entire thing, but quickly think of the word Om Ah Hum. How quick it is to think about those letters absorbing this beautiful light from the wisdom beings, their quality, and then that comes into those letters, they go into your food, and then say, and then after you do that, you offer it to your teachers. Imagine they are having some part of that as a wonderful practice, and then you take it in. And you can do that very quickly. It's not a big process. Maybe first 2-3 times you got to read through this or understand it. But once you do it, you can take a food and say, Om Ahum, and you see the visualization in your mind very quickly. But it's a good practice. It's another way of making even food part of your practice. And remember, all along, we are trying to change our mind. We are soaking in the virtuous mindset and eradicating the wrong views. And so you develop into the Buddha nature that you want to be. This is why you do the practice. And the last thing I have is sleeping, yoga of sleeping. It's a wonderful thing. So lie down. You know how Buddha passed away? You see sometimes in Thailand and all that, he's on the right-hand side with his hand here. So it's considered auspicious. Start even there. If you can't stay sleeping in that position, at least start that way. Think, may I pass away from sorrow like Buddha himself, so all my sorrows go away. Okay? As you lay on your right side, imagine that you're lying with your head on the lap of either your teacher or Buddha himself. Just imagine how wonderful that would be. Whichever your deity is, it's Mother Tara, also an emanation of Buddha, right? So put your head on the lap and then go to sleep with those beautiful thoughts. And when you wake up, guess where you were sleeping? You were in a lap of a Buddha. What another practice? It can also culminate into some positive dreams. Then you're ready in the morning to go again, right? But remember, don't think this as a chore. This you develop in the beginning. When you learn anything, you have to figure it out. But once it becomes a natural process, it's very, you do it with ease, with fun, enthusiastic perseverance, right? And you're trying to change that negative into positive or a hindrance into something valuable, and that's all you're trying to do. And we all have different ways of seeing things. Some of you are already advanced, maybe liberated even. Okay, but I'm just saying this is for purposes of putting it in context. When you say established daily practice, is not like, oh, I got to take an hour just like I go to the gym and I got to sit down and do this. Don't make yourself into that kind of thinking. Think what you're doing for your whole lifetimes or no more. So think of it as a big merit and how you practice and how you can soak it in. All right? So today we're going to do a practice, again, a meditation. If you feel dull or tired, feel free to stand up, walk away. It's not going to bother me. It's a meditation. We're going to go through all the way from Bodhicitta, refuge Bodhicitta, and we're going to end with precious human rebirth. And I want you to, again, if you're able to and not tired already, visualize clearly, think about it. And for those that like the meditations that I do slowly, unfortunately, it's 8:05. So we'll do the best we can, okay? But for you, if you're stuck in one space, fine, no problem. But we're going to go through the entire process so you can experience the entire process. So again, feel free to walk if you need to, okay? Or move around. No problem at all. Don't feel uncomfortable. So again, get yourself in a position. Okay? Easy, so you're not tight, comfortable, but not slouchy, you know, a little alert, because you want to pay attention. That's why the alertness is important. Yeah, this, all I have is this right now. That's wonderful. Okay. This is a meditation, a daily meditation practice for Lam Rim meditation, focusing on using the time that we have available to go more deeply into Lam Rim, and in this case, or particularly the precious human rebirth. So begin by making sure the spine is straight and take a deep breath in, calling to mind the motivation that we generated earlier, our innate wish to to be helpful. Our innate wish to stop suffering for ourselves and for others. Our innate wish to experience unending happiness and to be able to share that with others. And our wish to be guided and protected and blessed in order to be able to accomplish our goals. Now, visualizing in the space around us our mother and father of this life and all living beings, especially those most familiar to us. Imagining that we are doing this practice on their behalf. So then, recognizing that there is no way to generate realizations on the later stages of the path, such as the wisdom realizing emptiness, without first preparing our minds with the realizations of the earlier stages, and especially with the wish to recognize the opportunity of our lives and not waste it, we will do this practice and meditation on the precious human rebirth. Invite to this place all our teachers. Imagine that they merge together and take on aspect of Shakyamuni Buddha, the radiant sun of Dharma. Feel Shakyamuni Buddha's presence as much as possible. Generate the mind of refuge by remembering what we are afraid of, what we hope to become, and looking to all enlightened beings, their teachings, and the community of helpers who have seen reality directly, completely entrusting ourselves to their care. Remember our wish to help others, especially taking responsibility for the happiness of others. See the urgency of developing our mind as quickly as possible with the mind of Bodhicitta. So now we do seven limb practice. Then to prepare our mind for meditation, let's do the seven limb prayer. Recognize a quality within Shakyamuni Buddha that we ourselves wish to develop and making prostrations to that. Making offering to that. Admitting a mistake that we've made, with a resolve to do it differently next time or not do it. But also rejoicing in the goodness of ourselves and others. And requesting our teachers to stay in our lives and teach us. And finally, dedicating all positive energy to enlightenment. Making requests, especially in our hearts, requesting Shakyamuni Buddha, the essence of the enlightened activity, to please bless our minds to generate quickly the realization of the path, especially the precious human rebirth. Shakyamuni Buddha then comes to your crown of our head and stays there to bless our mind for meditation. So we begin with the Lam Rim prayer with the first two verses. Thinking of these verses as further requests to Shakyamuni Buddha, imagining that we recite this verse, we receive both the white nectar light of purification, clearing away those things that block our minds from generating the realization, and a golden light giving us the very essence of the realization within our mind. The foundation of all good qualities is the kind and venerable Guru. Correct devotion to him is the root of the path. By clearly seeing this and applying great effort, please bless me to rely upon him with great respect. Understanding that the precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once is greatly meaningful and is difficult to find again. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly, day and night, takes its essence or essence. To meditate on precious human rebirth, first recognize the situation that we find ourselves in, the richnesses. Currently, we have a human life. We have intelligence. We have strength still in our bodies. We have some inclination for spiritual practices. More than just having faith in those practices, we are actually here and have some interest to put, and then we need to put them into practice ourselves. And that we are free from involved in any extreme negativity in our lives. We live in a place and in a time where the Son of Buddha's teachings is still here. We are still in the age of Buddha's teachings existing in this world. Not only do the Buddha's teachings exist in this world, but people are still gaining experiences and the freedom by putting them into practice. There are still places to go and receive the teachings. There are still people who are supporting the teachings. So recognizing the blessings that we have, the opportunity we have. If we think about it, with all this richness in our life, there is nothing to stop us from the freedom. There is nothing standing in our way for us. It's only a matter of making effort. Freedoms. If we think about even just as human beings in this world, how many are there? Over 6 billion human beings. In all the various countries where they live, in all the various situations of life that they find themselves in. Of all those 6 billion human beings, how many of them even live in a place where they could meet the Dharma. Where they could even hear the word enlightenment, freedom. Think of places like some corners of Africa, not possible. In most Middle East, not possible. Even in those countries where Dharma is available, it is just a small little pocket. And even in the countries that are said to be Buddhist countries, in many cases, the teachings have degenerated and the complete teachings are not available. And true practitioners and teachers are not to be found easily. Rare and difficult to find. In fact, it's not so easy. There is not a place, not one country, in this whole planet where you know you can go and find pure Dharma everywhere. Of all the living beings in those places where Dharma can be found, where teachings to enlightenment can be found, how many ever hear the teachings? And of those who hear them, how many have real interest? And of those who have any interest, how many have leisure, fortune, freedom to be able to pursue that interest? And of those who have this leisure, that fortune, that interest, how many have met a teacher who has the qualities that they wish to develop in themselves? And of those who have met the teacher, how many recognize? And of those who have met the teachings and who have interest, who have leisure and freedom and fortune to pursue that interest, who have met the teachers and recognized their teachers, how many actually pursue the teachings? And how many actually devote their lives to enlightenment? Think of all the people you went to school with, the people in family, the people in the hometown. How many ever think enlightenment, freedom, even consider the possibility that the end of suffering is possible, even in my own family? The situation that I find myself in it is extremely rare. It is not common in the world to even think of this or like this. So what am I going to do with it? What is it possible to achieve with my life? Many people have some deep-seated aspiration, some suspicion that another reality, another experience of life is possible, but they have not met the method. But I have met the method. What am I going to do with it? People all around me are suffering from sickness, aging, death, dissatisfied mind, mental and physical disease, all the time. I have come into contact with the teachings that claim they can stop all these sufferings forever. How can I not try to pursue them? If there were some opportunity that I had to stop the death of all living beings, to stop the war, stop famine, stop disease, and I were not to try, how unfortunate that would be. Rare by the way of causes, how lucky I am. It's said in the teachings that a precious human rebirth comes about only with causes. Having practiced generosity, morality, patience, and especially making prayers, I pray to receive this life, I pray to have this opportunity. I pray to have this view. I pray to meet these teachings. I pray for a method to fulfill my deepest longings. I pray to perfect my mind. Now all the causes and conditions have come together. In this life, my prayers have been answered. What am I going to do with it? This is the life I prayed for. These are the teachings I searched for. Now I have the chance to attain freedom, perfection. Now I have the chance to help the world, to really help this world. What am I going to do with it? Conclusion. So asking Shakyamuni Buddha from the depth of our hearts to please, please, bless us to recognize this precious opportunity that we have found, to not forget it, and to use it to the best of our abilities, recognizing that nothing stands in our way to freedom, to enlightenment. All we have to do is make effort. How lucky we are. And so repeating the second verse of the prayer from Precious Human Rebirth in Lamrim, understanding that this precious freedom of this rebirth is found only once, is greatly meaningful and is difficult to find again. Please bless me to generate the mind that unceasingly, day and night, takes its essence. This life is as impermanent as a water bubble. Remember how quickly it decays and death comes. After death, just like a shadow follows the body, the results of the black and white karma follow. Finding firm and definite conviction in this, please bless me always to be careful, to abandon even the slightest negativity and accomplish all virtuous deed. Seeking samsaric pleasure is a door to all suffering. They are uncertain and cannot be relied upon. Recognizing these shortcomings, please bless me to generate the strong wish for the bliss of liberation. Even if I develop only bodhicitta, but I don't practice the three types of morality, I will not achieve enlightenment. And those three moralities are restraining from wrongdoing, morality of accumulating merit, and morality of benefiting sentient beings. Please bless me to practice the Bodhisattva vows with great energy. And once I have correctly analyzed the meaning of reality, please bless me to generate quickly within my mind stream the unified path of calm, abiding, and special insight. Please bless me to enter the holy gateway of fortunate ones, the supreme Vajra vehicle. As I have become firmly convinced of this, please bless me to protect these vows and pledges like my life. The essence of Vajrayana, by practicing with great energy, never giving up the sessions, please bless me to realize the teachings of my holy guru. And the spiritual friends who practice it have long lives. Please bless me to pacify completely all outer and inner hindrances. May I enjoy the magnificent Dharma by completing the qualities of the stages and the path. May I quickly attain the state of Vajradhara, the absolute nature of Buddha. Then we will recite the request, glorious and precious Root Guru. Please abide on the lotus and the moon seat on my crown, and taking care of me with your great kindness, bestow upon me the attainments of your holy body, speech and mind. Shakyamuni Buddha is extremely pleased with the effort that we've made and promises to remind us of our precious human life and help us to take advantage of this precious opportunity. Shakyamuni Buddha melts into a stream of golden light and descends to our heart, becoming inseparably mixed with our mind. Our body and mind are pervaded by this golden light, and the potential of our life is fulfilled. We are transformed into a pure being of golden light, abiding in this world solely for the purpose of benefiting others. This is me. Imagine what that would actually feel like. And let's dedicate. Then dedicating any positive energy that we have generated during this meditation to swift enlightenment of each and every living being, to the freedom from suffering in the world and beyond, the attainments of perfect happiness for all living beings, and that we ourselves might especially take advantage of this precious life that we have found, develop all realizations of this path within our minds, and quickly become exactly what is needed to benefit for all living beings. Thank you. With me? Thank you. It's 8:30. I was going to do Vajrasattva actually this time, but I realized that the next class is about purification. So when life is going on and you're practicing and you see all these hindrances coming in, all these obscurations coming in, how do you deal with that? We all have that, right? At work, at home, at family, things come. So how do you still continue your practice and balance that a little bit, and how do you purify? So I think Vajrasattva is a purification practice. So it goes perfectly with the next class, and we'll do that. But I wanted to make sure today that you go through some real deep thinking of setting the refuge, understanding bodhicitta, seven-limb prayer, offerings, right? Making requests, and thinking about precious human life, and how fortunate we are to have this Dharma practice. Any questions? Are you guys beginning to see the link of the practice? It is not only like 15 minutes here. You can do it however you want, but your idea is to kind of generate this feeling ongoing. You can leave it hanging, come back and finish it if you want. But at least keep this mind going. Don't make it up. I'll do all these crazy things and then I'll kind of practice for 15 minutes. Not like this. Just kind of blend it, soak it in slowly and steadily. So it really makes a difference and helps you change your mind in a positive way, hopefully. Okay, and do some reading. It's really, I know it gets very busy sometimes in life, but take a few minutes. Just read a little bit of just the required reading. It's not that much. And it's really nice. And then for a few minutes, I told you, take 5 or 10 minutes in your life from kitchen to living room, or if you're even in Kadampa Center and you're early or after the class, if you want to, just walk quietly and think about impermanence. Look at everything around you. Everything. From family to material to pillows to chairs to cars to trees, and see if anything is permanent. And think about it. And then develop in your mind the urgency to start slowly and steadily thinking about these things in a good way, the positive way, without feeling burdened by it. It's a wonderful thought. It will bring you happiness and bliss. And for a long time, you will develop, you are on your way to become a Buddha. So with that, thank you very much. We'll see you next Monday. this, people haven't done a lot of reading, so I will tell you, we talk about, there's a whole chapter in Pabongka Rinpoche. If you have this book, just do a little bit of reading on the 7-point mind training. And what it is these are points, and it emphasizes that these are the 7 ways you change your mind. There's preparatory practices, not blaming others. These are some real concrete ways, and Pabongka Rinpoche does a very wonderful job, and it's really amazing. And the pages, if I can tell you, I was reading it, it is around 539, 7-point mind training. Do a little bit of looking into it. You don't have to read every single page, but go through it. Also, I would ask that you take the prayer book if you have one. If not, maybe with permission, you can take some pictures. But start when you're here, a little few minutes, browse through it, and you'll be amazed. Even if you say taking Mahayana precepts, if you read through it, page 24, it tells you preliminary prayer, generating bodhicitta, purifying the place, offering the cloud mantra. It goes, walks you right through what we've been saying all along. And I was looking at who's taking the certification for discovering Buddhism. You are. So I have some test questions here, and you'll be amazed. You know them already. You've covered it many times, but we'll go through that if you are in questions. But that's good review. And I wanted to make sure I went through them today to see, have I covered them thoroughly enough for somebody to ask, what are 6 preparatory practices? You should know them. Right? So with that, I'll let you go. Thank you.